Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Random Chatter. This is our discussion episode. I believe it's 131. Recorded March 7th, 2017. We are going to be discussing Logan, but we've got a quick thing I want to get to first. I'm Eric. I'm here tonight with Lou and Chris. Lou, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
All right. And Chris, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful.
Awesome. I'm sleep deprived. I've got...
It's nice to meet you, sleep deprived.
Yes, yes. You've met me before, I'm sure. I got about 3 hours of sleep last night, 4 hours of sleep the night before, did two back-to-back 10-hour road trips. If I start mumbling or muttering to myself or what I say makes even less sense than usual, then just forgive me. Just ignore me and keep going on without me. Before we get to our main discussion, real quick, Chris, you had thrown up an interesting question in Slack earlier. I think it was earlier today. It says, nowadays, new episodes of most shows are once-a-week events. Kid shows are a little more prone to be once a day, but there are definitely exceptions. With the binge-watching culture taking over and TV networks and cable companies struggling, you think more shows, especially those with longer seasons, should broadcast new episodes more than once a week? That's a really good question. Now, shows traditionally have always done once a week, going as far back as I can remember, unless they're a daily show of some sort. But when we're talking primetime fiction, which I assume is the context you're talking about here,
yes.
I think really what it boils down to is production. You can only crank out, even a sitcom, you've got to write each episode. You've got to script it out. Then you have to get the scripts to the actors. They have to learn the dialogue. There may or may not be different sets involved. There may or may not be different costumes involved. You've got to then actually shoot everything. Then you've got whatever post-production you need to do. And that's on something like, let's say, The Big Bang Theory or Superstore. When you get into things like Westworld or The Expanse or things like that, now the production level is like crazy big. So I think a lot of it is, if we look back at Lost actually in its later seasons shrank the number of episodes so that they could get more of the content out on time and faster. I think a lot of it's just the speed that at which they're able to produce the episodes. When we see things that are released all at once to binge, they could have been released earlier if they were going to do week by week. But instead, I think that kind of as an experiment, really, it started with Netflix. They released an entire season all at once. And actually, the first show I remember them doing that with was Arrested Development Season 4. If I recall correctly. And it seemed like Season 4, a lot of it was overlapping scenes. So a lot of the scenes were kind of filmed simultaneously. And a lot of the episodes were being kind of co-produced. So production-wise, it even made more sense based on the way the content was. If you've watched Arrested Development, you know what I'm talking about. But I think if you're going to release something all at once, you're going to have to release it later than if you released it week by week. But I think it's a production timeline issue.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I don't know. The benefit of binge watching is you can consume a lot of the stuff right away, but there are some downsides to binge watching too. Number one, you might not really be picking up as much on individual episodes. A lot of them are going to blur together. The events that happen in the episodes can sometimes blur together. And if you get one really epic episode, you don't really have a chance for it to psychologically kind of marinate for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to really have a reaction to it and for you to go out and talk to your friends about it. I know I was talking to people about Season 2 of Daredevil. I wasn't talking about Episode 4. of season two of Daredevil, or episode seven. I was talking about season two of Daredevil, and not any particular event in it, though during the discussion we might go back to individual events. With Lost, when it was on the air, every week I was having discussions about what was happening that week. So I would have 20 different discussions, or even like in the later seasons, I'd have 6 or 7 different discussions, as opposed to one discussion I would have with a given person about Daredevil season two.
Mm-hmm.
And then additionally, you have 364 days to wait until the next season, as opposed to spreading it out over a few months and then only having, I don't know, 8 to 10 months to wait.
Yeah.
So there are pros and cons either way.
Well, I'll tell you why I brought it up. First of all, I should probably clarify that I was not necessarily referring to like sitcoms or really extravagant, like 40 plus minute TV shows, just because, you know, like things like, you know, The Expanse, that's only like 13 episodes a season, or Doctor Who, which has a short season. I mean, granted, that's a UK thing, but, you know, those kinds of things are more spread out for storytelling purposes, I think, but also just because, you know, you don't want to have, like, imagine if they aired Stranger Things right now on TV instead of Netflix. It's better fit for a week by week thing rather than, you know, you don't want to put it all in 1 week or all in a span of a month. But I'll tell you what brought it up. With the new Power Rangers movie coming out at the end of the month, I was curious about the history of the original TV show that came out in the 90s, because I was a huge fan back then. I watched Power Rangers for many years.
Okay.
And it was a weekday thing. Like, they don't really do this now, but they used to have a weekday block of like children's television from about like 3 to like 5 o'clock.
Right.
They had the Toonami block on Cartoon Network, which showed a bunch of anime. That's how I got into Dragon Ball Z. And that was a weekly thing. And I remember it was, you know, I would watch Power Rangers every day, and they had, and, you know, sometimes they had the little filler episodes, but they would also have the, like the arced episodes that might be like 5 parts to tell one story, but you could just air it all on the same week. So you didn't have to, you know, worry about airing something on Monday and then waiting until the following Monday to see part two. And granted, episodes of the original Power Rangers, or not episodes, but seasons of the original Power Rangers were really long. So that, I think it had like 60 episodes in season one. So it was, it worked. And then you could just do filler episode reruns in the meantime. But another reason I was thinking about this was the new Dragon Ball series, Dragon Ball Super, that just started its English dub. It airs every Saturday on Toonami, and that's fine. But the problem is that with a show like that, that's like 20 to 25 minutes, and it's anime, it's going to be long, and they're already, I think, maybe around 50 or, I don't know exactly, but probably around 50 or 60 episodes behind the Japanese airing. So, and you know, they're never really going to catch up to that, but that would be a show that would benefit from having a weekly thing rather than just one per week. And then that got me thinking about other shows that could do it. So, especially with binge watching being all the rage today.
Right. Well, you know, I remember back when I was a kid, there wasn't a lot of afternoon television series, but what there was, we had G.I. Joe and Transformers, a couple of other, well, we had Voltron. I never watched Robotech, but we had Robotech, but those were more anime things that, well, not anime, but those were what we called Japanimation, that was then redubbed into English. But, I know that with G.I. Joe and Transformers, they would write a bunch of episodes, they would send them to companies in Japan to be animated, and then they would send them back to the U.S., they would do the voice recordings, and then they would, you know, they'd have them ready to air. Mm-hmm. But when you send a bunch of animation out to one of these companies to do the animation, they can have a bunch of different people working on multiple different episodes simultaneously. And they were able to crank out some stuff. I remember, I think it was season 2 of Transformers had literally 52 episodes for the season. That's one a week for an entire year. That's the way TV should be done. None of this, you know, 6-episode, 10-episode UK nonsense. I want 52 episodes in my TV series. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So it's a little bit different when you get into animation. Now, the Power Rangers show, I know that they took a lot of stuff that was already done for Japanese shows, and then they had they added footage of American kids in American high schools and then interspersed it with the Japanese footage.
Yeah.
So that might have cut some of their production time and production expenses and such. I don't know how that would have affected it. But even flash forwarding to today, if you look at shows like The Voice, that's on 2 or 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
I think American Idol used to do that for a while too. They'd have like 3 nights a week where they'd air it. So I think it can be done, but a live show like that, a reality show sort of thing, again, production is a little bit different.
Yeah, they're not heavily scripted either. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's not a lot that they have to necessarily edit after the fact. They do edits, but you know, they're not, it's not something like Big Brother where they're pouring over 24 hours worth of footage in a given day and then taking the parts they want.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it still boils down to how long does it take for them to produce the episodes?
Mm-hmm.
But looking back at the examples that I'm thinking of when I was growing up where they had, you know, G.I. Joe and Transformers 5 days a week, that was the block. There were maybe 4 different shows on one channel, and that was it. If you look across primetime TV over the course of a week, you've got, you know, 30 different shows. So you would have to strip down your options of what you're going to watch into fewer series.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's complicated, but it's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Just makes me think that we'll get more streaming, like more shows wanting to do streaming rather than go the cable route, just because I think that's a future we're headed in.
It seems that way. It seems that way. If you look, you know, 5-10 years ago, if you would go back in time and tell people then what Netflix and Hulu would become now,
mm-hmm.
There's no way they'd believe it.
You're right.
So, all right. Do we want to do a spoiler discussion of Logan?
Yes.
Is that what we're going to do? Okay. It's hard not to.
Chris.
All right. So we'll give a spoiler warning in just a moment. Logan just came out this past weekend. This is the latest Wolverine movie. I guess this would technically be what, Wolverine 4, if you wanted to use a numeric system. And it is set in the year 2029. It is loosely based on the Old Man Logan series from the comic books. Logan is older and his body is wearing down a little bit. His healing factor doesn't work as well as it used to. Professor X is also much older, is having some physical issues. In this, I don't want to say post-apocalyptic world, because it's not really that, but the world seems to be a little more run down. Mutants seem to not really exist anymore. There are no new mutants being born. And that's kind of the environment and the setting for the film, through various means. This is all information just from the the teasers and the trailers. Logan comes across a little girl who's being hunted and reluctantly seems to take her in, and they are on the run together. So that's the back of the DVD spiel. Before we get into actual spoilers, as is tradition going all the way back to 2005 on the various Random Chatter shows, I want a quick, in a nutshell, review from each of us, and then we'll dive into the spoilers. So, Lou, what did you think of Logan?
Start with me.
I can start with me and Chris if you want.
No. I will start. I enjoyed the movie. I went in with really no expectations of what the story was about because I did not keep up with the X-Men comics. I didn't keep up with the Wolverine comics. So I really didn't know, you know, what it was based on, if anything. So I didn't have anything to be, you know, let down by a movie that didn't meet my expectations. Mm-hmm. As an X-Men movie, which, you know, it is part of the franchise, I think it's probably the best X-Men movie out there.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is not without its problems, though. I thought it had some consistency pacing issues throughout the movie. I thought the, and I'm not just talking about breaks in the action, I'm talking about just, it just didn't seem like it flowed real well. I mean, you always need a breaks in the action in the movie to let you just catch your breath and kind of get the story out, but this seemed to go beyond that. There's also some inconsistencies with some of the characters, and I can't really get into that without talking about spoilers, so I'll say that for later on. But yeah, while I enjoyed the movie, and it was an excellent X-Men movie, a good comic book movie, it is not without problems.
Okay. Now, I agree with most of what you said, but I think in the end, I might rate it higher than you. I agree that it's probably the best X-Men film. I agree that
you said that even above Deadpool.
Deadpool's not an X-Man.
Well, we talked about it before.
Oh, did you think you were roping me into something there? Nice try. It is okay. So seriously, considering Deadpool, I would say that it is, I would probably put Deadpool higher because Deadpool didn't have the same pacing issues that Logan did. But I would say that they are both of the same general caliber of film and that they're both so much higher than any of the other X-Men films. Like, if you wanted to get something close to this X-Men-wise, you'd have to go back to the original or maybe the second one.
All right. You know, I would add one more thing to my little quick review there.
Uh-huh.
One of the things I thought that the movie didn't do as well as it probably could have or should have was I think it was trying too hard to be R-rated. And I thought of that again if you mentioned Deadpool, because that was one of the things that we talked about other movies being R-rated after Deadpool did so well as being R-rated. I thought the filmmaker was trying to push that R rating so much that, oh, hey, we can do this now, when you should have maybe you didn't have to do that.
Okay.
And I'm not one to say I don't want to see violence because I like violent movies. I think it the realism is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It got a bit much for me. It's like, okay, I've seen him, you know, stab this guy and blood coming out and really being a violent Wolverine movie, which it should be. But it just got too much sometimes. It was like, wow, you didn't need to do it that way. Or when we talk about spoilers, I'll talk about why I thought some of the stuff was a little bit off.
Okay. All right. So that's where I would depart from what you're saying. I've not kept up in recent X-Men comics, but I do go quite a ways back. I'm going to say to very early 90s, and X-Men, that was always my thing. So I was never really enamored with Wolverine in the same way that a lot of other people were. I never got really fanboyish over him, but I liked the character, and I do have a long history with the character. And to me, the movie seemed, when it comes to the portrayal of Logan and the level of violence and the R rating, to me, it felt perfect. I did not at all find that it was the director trying too hard to make it R rated. I understand what you're talking about. But to me, it felt natural. To me, this felt like this is the non-watered down Wolverine that I would have liked to have seen in the other X-Men films. this is what he would be in the real world. In the same way that people liked Batman Begins for having a more realistic version of Batman, to me, this felt like the real world version of Wolverine. And I didn't find it gratuitous. I feel like this is like each and every kill in the movie. This is what he would have done. This is how he would have done it. This is how many he would have on his kill count. It fit.
Okay. And I think you're right to an extent, but I think when we get into the spoilers, I'll talk about why I think some of it was just a bit off.
Okay. Chris, what do you think?
Okay. First of all, I want to preface by saying that I am not that much of an X-Men fan or Wolverine. I've not seen any of the prior movies. The only X-Men movies I saw were First Class, and I breezed through Apocalypse, which I thought was terrible.
It was. You need to go back, and seriously, you need to go back and watch the first two X-Men films.
Yeah, I've seen them years ago. Just I don't remember them at all. I just know I saw them. Aside from that, I've seen a little bit of the animated series, and I actually the most X-Men I've consumed was X-Men Evolution, which was a cartoon in the right at the start of the millennium that started airing. So
was that the one where they were in high school?
Maybe.
Okay.
Possibly. I can't remember. I had to actually even look up that title because I can't remember the full title, but I did see that. I actually watched that pretty frequently. So that's my knowledge of X-Men. That being said, I think for the most part, both of you are wrong in your criticisms.
I didn't criticize anything.
I thought, in a nutshell, Logan was the best, easily one of the best comic book movies I've seen, I'd probably of all time. Granted, we've not had too many, but we've had quite a few recently. And it may even surpass Guardians of the Galaxy as my favorite.
Oh, see, I was with you right up until that point.
You know,
now it's crazy talk.
You know, Chris, I know you're young and inexperienced sometimes, but no, I'm just kidding. I can see why you'd say some of those things, and I really want to like this movie. It's a very good movie, but no, without getting into spoilers, and I really want to talk about some of the details of why I think the movie isn't as good as it could have been. Come down to story. Come down to just the story and consistency of the story itself.
All right. Well,
I like what they're trying to do, but there's issues with it that I just can't look past.
Well, let's in part for the sake of time, let's go ahead and take the gloves off. From this point on, we are going to give full spoilers for Logan. I would highly recommend you not get spoiled for this film. I don't think there's a lot of major surprises, but it's going to feel better if you can go into it not having a bunch of spoilers. So this is one of the few times here on the podcast where we recommend people stop listening, and that's only if you haven't yet seen the movie. And when you do, please consider coming back to this podcast, noting that we're at, I don't know, the 24, 25 minute mark, and picking up where you left off. Because I think we're going to have some interesting things to say here, it sounds like. But so I think I've rambled on long enough that you've had ample time to stop the episode. So jumping into spoilers, I'm going to throw down here a little bit first, because I know Lou's probably going to have the more negative opinion. So let's start with a more positive opinion for the negative opinion to respond to. I agree that this is probably one of the best comic book films of all time. And in part because it's not so much about the comic booky aspect of it. It's a character movie. First and foremost, there are no epic, you know, you don't have Apocalypse trying to destroy the world. You've got one guy who gets stuck with one little girl, and he's trying to protect her while they're being hunted. And that's it. Like, that's the story. And I think that makes it really compelling. I think the character development for Logan himself is phenomenal. I think the character development for Professor X is phenomenal. I thought that even Caliban, who is, in my opinion, a throwaway character in the comic books, was developed really well. Played by Stephen Merchant. And I thought that the villains were adequately villainous and adequately intimidating. I feel like you honestly felt the intensity of their situation and the direness of it. I feel like there was no foregone conclusion at the end of the movie, whether Logan was necessarily going to win or not, especially given that throughout the movie, you see him deteriorating further and further. It's very possible that Logan can die at the end of the film. So you don't necessarily know how it's going to go. And so that sets you up for a little bit more investment in what happens. Now, I will agree with what Lou said about the pacing. The pacing was a little disjointed in some cases. Even when it was down, though, again, it's not so much an issue of slow or fast as much as it is about a little bit disjointed. The flow wasn't quite where it needed to be. It didn't seem to flow up and down. It seemed to jump up and down a little bit. I think that still, even in most of the down moments, it still provided a lot of character development. And I think, especially as the movie went on, I think early on it was a little harder to deal with. I think it felt like the movie took a little bit too long to really get going. But that being said, I think that there were so many things that this movie did almost flawlessly that it's a strong movie. I really like it, and I think it's one of the best ones out there. Now, Chris, you're smoking crack if you think it's better than Guardians of the Galaxy.
I didn't say it was better.
Okay.
I said it might surpass as my favorite.
Okay. Now, I will say it's not even there. It's not so much even my favorite as much as I think it's the best, or amongst the best. I don't know how many times I would want to go back and rewatch this. I'll rewatch it a couple more times, but I don't think I'm going to keep coming back to it just because it is very dark. It's sad. I almost started tearing up at the end, especially the connection between him and Laura. And his final line was just absolutely perfect. Could not have been written any better. So I think it would be tough for me to watch too many times. But that being said, there are definitely some Marvel movies I would put it over easily. So, Lou, seems like you liked it the least of the three of us. Let's get into the...
You know, it's hard to say because I really did enjoy the movie, and I thought it was a good movie. I would see it again. It's better than some other comic book movies that are out there, but then again, we're comparing against comic book movies, which aren't known as being marvelous pieces of cinema.
You're right.
You know, the pacing problems I had with it, it seemed like it just didn't go anywhere for stretches of the movie. And I understand character development, and I thought some of the character development was very good. Some of it was just kind of, okay, who is this Caliban character? Not having his... you know, backstory from the comics or anything, I have no idea who this guy is. And we didn't do a great job of making me feel anything for the guy. And okay, they ended up torturing the guy. Big deal. I mean, it wasn't like it was this huge love between the three characters that I really felt, oh my God, they're going to hurt Caliban. I didn't have that feeling from the movie. I mean, Chris, did you feel for Caliban?
Yes, I will agree with you that they didn't really explain who he was and his overall connection to Logan, and then to a lesser extent, Professor X. But I did feel for him, yes. And I think part of that has to do with the portrayal by Stephen Merchant. I think he did a really, really good job at... making his character feel emotional and like he was important and part of the story, even though it wasn't his story that we're being told. Does that make sense?
I mean, he did a great job portraying the character.
I agree with Lou, though.
I didn't get the sense that he was important to Wolverine or to Professor X.
So in the comic books, Caliban is a mutant hunter who is used by the bad guys, the Reavers, led by Donald Pierce, the guy with the robotic hand here in this movie. That's another thing that was never really talked about. And he's used to hunt down mutants. And then later he kind of flips sides and becomes a good guy. But I mean, he's basically a slave. And you're right, Lou. And I didn't think about that because I knew his backstory going into it. And I guess I just took it for granted. But if you don't know that, you're right. At one point they mention that he can track mutants. They never explain how. They never demonstrate how. So it's another one of those show don't tell things. They told and they didn't even do a good job of telling, and there was absolutely no showing. So I get it there. Now, I did sympathize with the character. Again, I'm biased because I knew about the character, but I agree that the portrayal was spot on. The buildup for the character and him being tortured and the fact that, you know, we don't necessarily know what his backstory is with Xavier and Logan, but we know that he does have one, and so we at least sympathize with him a little bit there. But you're right, it was definitely a failing that they threw this character in, wanted you to sympathize with him, barely scraped through with getting you to do so based on the overall quality of the film, but missed the opportunity to actually give us meaningful information about the character.
Yeah, I mean, cool character, well portrayed, but
who is he?
I didn't feel a connection for him. So I felt bad that, you know, guy got tortured, but I'm like, who is he really? You know?
Right. No, that's a good point. I hadn't even considered that.
So the pacing issue between some of the stuff going on, I mean, we had the section in the middle of the story with, what's the actor's name? Eric LaSalle, the farmer guy.
Will, I think was his name.
Was that his name in the movie? Okay.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Character development, it built some stuff up. It led us to another part of the story. But I'm thinking to myself, why are we here? We're doing this again. We had another confrontation with these guys, and it's another battle very similar to the other one where they were escaping from the first place they were at. I'm like, I don't see that. And then we bring up the whole, you know, the other guys and the whole water thing, and I'm like, where is this going? It seemed to take me out of the story and slow things down. I'm like, what, you know, I know where we're going, but we're on this little side trip somewhere, and it's a touching, feeling story about how, oh, we're going to have a meal with these people and get to know them, and I'm sure they're all going to die, but I'm like, why was that there? Did that just, was it just me, or did that slow the whole story down to the point where I'm like, okay, let's move it along?
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'll admit that one of the house scenes there, I think it was after they ate dinner, and was traveling to the water place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's ironically the point where I had to use the bathroom. So I took a quick trip there, which I never do in the middle of movies. I'm always afraid I'm going to miss something. But
now see, when you get older like us, you can just wear a catheter to the movie and then you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Chris, you didn't miss much.
I didn't think so.
I didn't think it was that bad. My
but I liked
it. It wasn't horrible. It's just, I'm like, why are we, you know?
See, to me, it worked because it was. Okay, so first of all, comparing it to other scenes, that didn't break it for me. What broke it for me, pacing wise, was Vegas, which I don't even necessarily feel compelled to talk about. I'm not that angry about it. I felt like it was a little bit wasted.
I see that too, yeah.
But the scene with Eric LaSalle and his family, to me, that was a little bit more meaningful. That was another example of Professor X trying to get Wolverine to connect with other human beings around him, something that Logan was not doing.
Mm-hmm.
He was very detached, and this is an example of, you know, Logan, look, this is what we're fighting for. There are other people, and they have families, and they have real lives, and you need to try to connect with them again. And you knew, sure, you knew it was going to go badly, but that was another kind of a character building moment between him and Professor X, because it's Logan realizing that, you know, okay.
But even that didn't really work, because he said that up in the bedroom. After he puts him in bed, he's like, you know, look around. This is what life is. And Wolverine's like, Oh, okay. And leaves. I'm like, yeah, he doesn't get it. You know, it's like, I know what you're trying to lead him to, but he blatantly, in the dialogue in that scene,
but it also shows how Professor X is wrong. Well, not wrong, but the cost of, like, Wolverine was right in the first place by not involving them, and there's a reason he's so detached, and yet that detachment still is detrimental to him. And yet, like, it keeps flipping back and forth. You know, there's this, but then there's that, but then there's that. So Professor X, now he's caused a situation where this family loses their lives because they just had to stick around a little bit longer. They had to stick around until morning. They couldn't have left when they should have, and it cost them their lives. So now Logan is vindicated and knows that he was correct, and yet, you know, he still feels this loss and still, like, it's tragic that he's correct, and it's yet another grave weighing on Logan's conscience.
Mm-hmm.
To me, like, yes, was it predictable? It was absolutely predictable, but it also fit. It fit the story. It fit the character building. And I thought that it was a fitting end for Professor X.
Yeah.
Because
that,
it was also
that worked for me. Yep.
It was also exactly about what Professor X was, at least in this iteration. There have been different variances on him depending on who's writing the comic at any given time, but it's him, the whole attitude of, you know, this is what we're protecting. It's not about mutant superiority. It's about that we're all humans. And look, the humans want to help us too. We all just want to act like humans to one another. And yet, as a result, he ends up with them dying, and then he himself ends up getting killed by what he presumably believes to have been Logan himself. Though, you know, I don't know. He's also a telepath. Maybe he kind of figured out it wasn't
said that
Logan.
And then, you know, Wolverine's like, no, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. You know.
But we don't know whether that, Charles was conscious
enough. We
don't know
if he thought
to,
it was or not, right?
Right.
Okay, well, let's move on to the violence aspect of it then.
Okay.
And I'm not against violence in movies. I mean, I think it's fine to have violence in movies.
Mm-hmm.
This to me bordered on, and we've talked about this in horror movies before, of scary movies with violence versus gore for gore's sake.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of times in the movie, it seemed like they were purposely showing blood and gore just because they could, because it was an R-rated movie. The first one that comes to mind is, what was the girl's name? Lauren?
Laura.
Coming out of the building with the guy's head, which I thought was fine. She mm-hmm. throws it. We didn't need the head to roll up to the camera. We knew what it was. We knew what she did. It's like, okay, we're purposely making sure we can definitely see the entire screen is this guy's head. Okay, yeah, we did that. I mean, we knew we did that. You didn't have to spoon feed me that piece, you know? And then the Vegas scene when we were, no, it wasn't the Vegas scene. Maybe it was the first.
The Vegas scene was when they had that psychic thing going on for Professor X and Wolverine.
Yeah, you really couldn't see much. Yeah, but there was other scenes where.
No, there was a lot. You could see. That's the thing. That was the one scene where you did get to see a lot. He's impaling people through the skull.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I may be with you. You couldn't hear my eye rolling earlier because it's an audio podcast. And you won't hear the rest of my eye rolling. But in the Vegas scene, while I disagree, I would concede that you've got a really strong point on the Vegas scene.
I mean, we knew what he was doing. We know he's a violent guy. You can show that without showing. Let me put it this way. Picture this violence done in the same style of filmmaking as the violence that was done in John Wick. It would have portrayed much more to me if they did it that way.
We would have had more of it and it would have been faster. I mean, there weren't guns.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, we got how violent John Wick was without having to be gratuitous blood and everything else. We knew what happened.
No, and we had gratuitous blood in John Wick. I mean, headshots, point blank, repeatedly.
But it didn't feel the same as if they were purposely trying to show us to you like they did in Wolverine, because this is the first time we get to see Wolverine stab somebody and have blood really come out. in my recollection on screen.
Yeah.
You know, and because they could do that this time, I said, oh, let's do it a lot. But let's make sure we show a lot of the blood.
When you have three razor sharp claws swiping across someone's abdomen, frankly, it would be a lot worse than they showed. You'd actually have a spaghetti plate of intestines spilling out of the guy's guts. You'd have blood spurting out arterially.
Right. And you could have done that.
Organ, made
that
the look spleen realistic and the liver and
what
stuff.
They did with the head, you know, stabs where it looked like an afterthought to add more blood onto the thing. It looked like that, you know, the special effects were so bad in that it looked like it was an afterthought to me. And it looks like they did it. Oh, let's add more blood because we can.
Ow, ow, ow. I think I rolled my eye too hard there. Hold on. Oh, okay. I'm all right.
Okay. Well, we'll agree to disagree on that point.
I think we may have to, because I don't really have any strong counterpoints other than Lou, you're wrong.
The head rolling thing that didn't seem
which one?
Over the top.
No, the head rolling thing. No, to me that, like, even if I were going to try to predict the things that you would come up with as arguments in here, I totally would have got the Vegas thing. I would have got some more of the impaling through the skull thing. I never would have even thought of the head rolling thing. Like, to me, that was,
I mean, the head thing, it was cool to have her do that. And when she came walking out, I was like, what's she carrying? I didn't really pick it up at first. And then I knew what it was. And as she threw it, you definitely knew what it was. And they could have done that. And I guess it's just a decision on the director's part or the cinematographer's part to show the head rolling up to the camera, so you definitely can make sure you knew what it was. I'm like, you went like a roll and a half too far, you know? And I know I'm nitpicking, but it just seemed like it was like, you know, it just, because of the whole thing of R-rated comic book movies, and this is the second one we've had now, and it was a big thing last time, and we had the discussion about, well, what's right and what's wrong for this, how they're going to do it without making it seem like they're trying too hard, and I'm like, that just seemed like they were trying too hard.
See, to me, the way that, no pun intended, the way they executed it in this film makes me feel so much more better about the possibility of getting future R-rated comic book films. Like,
really?
I was on the fence before, and now I'm like, oh yeah, let's do this.
Are you drinking tonight?
I'm not. I wish I were. Okay. Chris, help me out, man.
First of all, Lou, you're wrong.
Thank you.
Although I will concede, like Eric did, and say that I can understand the Vegas thing.
Yeah.
Like, I saw that. I thought it was really cool just because we finally get to see the true viciousness of Wolverine, something that I don't think we were getting previously. And we finally saw it. So it doesn't bother me, though. I can see your point. The head rolling thing, I have no problem with. I didn't even know it was a head until literally they showed that it was a head, like that roll. Like, I'm glad they rolled up to it, because I would have thought it was.
So
like
they filmed
a,
that scene for you then, because I knew what it was ahead of time. You had to see the head
ahead of time.
The camera,
get it ahead of.
Yeah, ahead of time. Yeah, yeah. You had to have the head hit the camera so you could know what it
was.
I understand.
No, Chris, I'm with you. Like, it wasn't really in focus until it got closer to the camera, and then it's like, oh yeah, it's a head. And,
but here's a point that I thought of while you guys were talking. It's like, Lou, I'm surprised you didn't say this, but personally, I found, like, yes, Wolverine was very violent, but I honestly think that Laura was a little bit more.
And yet they didn't show the blood, which, you know, it still conveyed the violence to me. She was amazingly violent.
She was a little more swift with her actions and her killings than Wolverine was. I think that's because, you know, she's a child and she's smaller, whereas Wolverine is big and bulky and old. But that's partially the reason. And I also think that maybe they didn't want to show too much because, you know, it's a kid killing a bunch of adults.
That's probably actually an issue. Yeah, I'm sure that was a concern.
But I also think
her method of attack too was more impaling, whereas a lot of Wolverines was a little bit more slashing.
Yes.
Now again, a lot of impaling in Vegas. I'll concede that one. Mm-hmm. But
I thought they handled her violence so much better, so much more realistically.
I guess I can see that, but
I can't.
I like that they, when it came to Laura's violence, that they, I think they did it for story purposes as well, because as they mentioned multiple times in the film, those kids were bred to be weapons, and mm-hmm. they literally know no other life than to hurt people and kill people and, you know, cause havoc. And I think that we see that in the actions that Laura does, and just I think that was her. I think that's why they had the head rolling thing, was because that was the first time that we got to see how much of a badass she's supposed to be.
Right.
Like, we're supposed to be like, oh, this is not someone we want to mess with. And then we see that exhibited multiple times in the movie. And again, I can see your point with some of the scenes being a little gratuitous, but as someone who especially despises horror movies that are just gore fests,
mm-hmm.
I think it was done really well with not really any problems. Again, I can see your point, but okay.
I can see your points too. I mean, I'm not saying it's a black and white issue. It's just my opinion. And, you know, we all have our own opinions.
And I think that's something too, that, like, I'm surprised I'm not seeing a bunch of outrage from this movie. I know that there was a lot with Deadpool, and this being another R-rated movie that has, I've only seen Deadpool once, so Eric can probably clarify this, but what would you say had more violence in it? Wolverine or Deadpool?
Well, I think the kill count in Wolverine was higher. And it also, there's a...
Or visible violence, I should say.
There's also a psychological...
Just because you kill someone doesn't mean you see the killing in detail.
True. I would say probably Wolverine was a little more violent in the sense that there's a different psychological intensity to... a melee death versus a death with a ranged attack. Like, it, as someone in the military, former military, if I had to shoot someone in combat, and I've not ever done this, I don't want to diminish the psychological impact of having had to do it, but at least the first time I would have to do it before it had impacted me psychologically, I don't think I would hesitate to do it. I would definitely hesitate to run up to a combatant and stab him with a bayonet. There's just something a little more intimate about, you know, killing with your hands as opposed to pushing a button.
Yeah.
And having a weapon do the killing for you. So regardless of, I mean, Wolverine, I think, had a higher kill count, but I'm not sure. But almost all of Deadpool's killing was done by guns.
Yeah,
there were a few exceptions, and they were almost more in montage scenes. Whereas Wolverine was much more intimate. But I think that that's also important too, because you, in that those intimate moments, you had villains that were more of a threat to someone who was more innocent. Deadpool's not innocent. I mean, anybody trying to kill Deadpool is not necessarily in the wrong. With Logan, it was different. And then also it showed, I mean, Logan has psychological problems. He is detached, and Xavier's trying to save his soul in a certain point of view. And we see kind of the toll that it's taking on Logan. The deaths, while they are bloody because they're very violent, slashing type deaths, they're also, there are consequences. There are psychological consequences to the character doing that. And there's even some mention of that with Laura watching Shane and the dialogue from Shane, and then the eulogy at the end of the film, kind of like, you know, yeah, killing sometimes needs to be done, but that doesn't mean that all is forgiven for the person doing the killing. They still kind of have to leave town. There's no place for them there. So, and really that kind of sums up a lot about the Wolverine character. He's the damaged goods that you need to have in order to keep other people from having to become that. And I think that this movie did a nearly perfect job of portraying that. Yeah, there's a ridiculous level of violence there, but that's part of why he's damaged. I mean, he goes into this mentally savage state, and that takes a toll on him psychologically too. But that's always what Wolverine has been about, especially the interaction between him and Xavier.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to argue that the movie was too violent. Mm-hmm. I'm arguing that I didn't like the way they portrayed the gore part of it.
That the visuals for it were gratuitous.
Is an inherently violent character, and I think they portrayed that very, very well. I just disagreed with some of the cinematography stuff or some of the special effects stuff of how they portrayed some of the gore, the blood. It just didn't seem, I wanted to see him stab guys. I wanted to see him be violent and be just ruthless the way he can be as a character. But I just disagree with the way they shot some of the stuff.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'll give it to you in Vegas at least.
Okay. So my last thing is an inconsistency in some of the characters. Especially Laura and the rest of her crew. We get down to the end of the movie and the, guys from the bio company there are tracking them down and they're chasing them through the woods and they're just picking these kids up pretty easily. These are weapons that are, they mentioned they didn't work out because they didn't want to do the violence. They didn't want to be that way. They had free will. Mm-hmm. When you're being chased, you're going to use whatever weapons you have at your disposal to do that. And they didn't use them until after everybody was kind of captured and rounded up. It seemed very inconsistent for me to see how easily Laura took out a host of guys in the beginning of the movie and then didn't really do much when they're all running away until she hooked up with Wolverine again and then started the fight.
Okay. So to play devil's advocate there, these kids were tested, but not trained. So yes, they had abilities and tests were conducted on those abilities, but they weren't necessarily trained for combat and they weren't necessarily trained for making the right decisions. And when you've got a group of them and you're trying, like you have a dedication to the group and you're trying to get the group to get by, you all run as a group. You don't try to stand and fight, especially not against the people who you have seen kill other members of the group before, almost kill you. I mean, these are, you've got the victim mentality a little bit too. When you have, it's the old adage about the elephant. You take a baby elephant and you put a chain around its ankle and you put a wooden stake in the ground and the elephant doesn't have the strength to get out away from the stake. Well, when the elephant's all grown up, all you need is still that little tiny stake in the ground because the elephant remembers that that's what's keeping it there. When you've got the same people chasing and trying to kill you that have been abusing you ever since you were literally born, you have an innate fear of them, and your only concern is to get away. The flight and fight instinct, the fighting, you know it doesn't work because you've observed that your entire life, that in a fight, those guys will always win. So the only option is flight, and you only then resort back to fighting again when flight is no longer an opportunity, when that's no longer viable.
Yeah, I see your point, but some of it doesn't really work when you get, like, the girl that could breathe the cold air on the guy. You know, she started fighting back when the guy had his arm around her. She froze his arm and broke his arm off.
So if she stops and waits for an opportunity to freeze the guy, he shoots her from a distance.
Right, but what I'm saying, none of the other characters that got captured didn't fight back when they were grabbed. They all have abilities. They all know what to do with them. They may not be trained to use them, but they all know they have a dangerous ability. That one kid that showed on the video in the facility was, blowing guys against the wall with his, hand motions. Mm-hmm. Presumably everybody has some sort of a nasty ability. When you're cornered and captured like a dangerous animal, you're going to fight back. And none of them did until they were all kind of together and said, let's do this now, you know? It just seemed very inconsistent to me. I mean, they seem to be captured way too easily for what they should have been able to do.
You could also argue that the people chasing them know the kids, know what their abilities are, and may have had different ways of hampering their abilities or being able to predict who would do what, etc.
Didn't show us any of that.
You're right, they didn't. That's a fair point. We did see some cases where the kids did try to fight back and succeed, and some where they did try to fight back and they lost. One of the kids took one person out and then was clocked upside the head by a different person. But yeah, okay, you're right.
One kid just fell down and they took him away. I'm like, dude, what's your ability, man? Was it to fall down or what?
Well, we don't know. Maybe it's mind reading or maybe it's.
No, I know what you're saying. And you bring up a very valid point that we don't know what their abilities are, and we don't know if they were able to combat them against some other way that we know this kid can do this, so let's just throw a bag over his head and he can't use that type thing. But right. They didn't do a very good job explaining that.
You're right.
It seemed inconsistent from the way she was able to evade and kill, five or six guys in that first building, cut one of their heads off and bring it in.
Yeah, but her DNA is from Wolverine, who is part of his mutant abilities, at least according to the comic books, has always been, in the movies too, has always been an animalistic instinct for hunting and fighting and all of that. So you could argue that her ability that seemed to be lacking in the other kids comes by way of genetics.
Have these guys never thought of trank darts? I mean, I was also thinking about it too. I'm like, pump her full of horse tranquilizers and she'll get down pretty easily. We can then put a collar on her and take her away.
Have you ever tried shooting Wolverine with trank darts?
I personally know.
It's been tried in the comic books before. It hasn't gone well. So maybe that's something they have tried.
You know? How is she supposed to grow? Adamantium bones now? I mean,
I don't know.
That was the other thing I didn't get.
I think you're overthinking it.
That part I am. But I'm just saying, I mean, she's going to grow, right? I mean, what's the bones going to do?
Well, the adamantium isn't part of the genetics, though. So it could be that they are they are applying the adamantium to her over time.
Fused to her bones, right?
Right.
Lou, I have three responses to you because I think Eric actually covered it pretty well, including some of what I wanted to say. But one, they're children. So that enough is might be a reason why they weren't able to fight these people off. Second thing is, I think, and this is at least my interpretation, so you might have a different one, I think that there were more of the soldiers there than what we realized or what we might have saw on screen. In other words, it was kind of overwhelming to however many, I don't remember how many kids there were, but I know there weren't a lot.
Not many. You're right.
Yeah, so I think that there were a lot more soldiers around.
That's a good point.
We were led to believe. And three, Eric made a good point about, we don't know what some of the powers are for these kids, but we also have to remember that, think about someone like Eleven from Stranger Things, who has really, really crazy powers, but after a while, she just exhausts them after using them like once or twice on somebody. And she has like the nosebleed and then faints. So again, mm-hmm. I think it just goes back to their kids. And yes, they were born for this and they were bred to be weapons. And yes, they're not really trained, but I think that they don't have full control of their powers. So, when you're in a situation like Eric was saying, where it's fight or flight, as a kid, there's only so much you can do with untamed powers. And again, you might just have used it all on one or two people, and then you're exhausted by that point.
You're also running breakneck speed through the woods in a panic.
Exactly.
So at some point, you've already been
trekking for a while.
Right. But
okay.
If nothing else, Lou, we have to concede the fact that they didn't explain it to us.
Our arguments
that we're making are based on assumptions. Whereas you're just pointing out, listen, we have no reason to believe that that would make sense. Without making suppositions.
And I don't need it spoon-fed to me. We've said that before. I mean, I was okay with the head. I knew it was a blurry head. I knew it was a head. Give me a reason of why these kids were captured so easily. I mean,
okay.
They evaded capture. It just seemed way too easy at the end.
All right. Well, would you at least agree that this, for a superhero movie, had a lot less problems than most?
Oh, I said before, I liked the movie. I really did. It was one of the better comic book movies I've seen.
Okay.
Definitely one of the best X-Men movies I've seen. I just don't think it was, for the past, a couple of days, I've heard everybody, kind of gushing on the internet about how great this movie is. And I'm like, it had some issues.
It does have some issues, but it is great. Star Wars has issues, and we think Star Wars is great.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Okay.
I think more comic book movies should learn from it, actually. And by the way, I want to make a quick plug. If you're listening to this and want to hear more Logan talk, the next episode of Chasing Fandom will actually be a little bit about Logan and what comic book movies in the future can learn from it.
Cool.
All right.
So, who's your guest?
His name is Ryan, and he's one of my friends here in town. We used to work together. He is a big, big comic book fan, also a big Star Wars fan. But I knew immediately when I liked this movie as much as I did that I had to have him on to talk about its influence on comic book movies in the future.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Random Chatter. So we're
go see Logan if you haven't already.
A little over an hour. Yes, if you definitely. Haven't already, what are you doing? Spoilers? Jeez. All right. Well, we would like to know what you guys think about Lou being off his rocker.
That is an
age reference because old people rock in a rocking chair. So just got to fulfill that stereotype too. So
if you guys thought the movie was good, but just had some issues,
And that's fair. I think we're maybe making it sound like you disliked it more than you claim to be. But
yeah.
But let us know what you think about the violence thing. This is something I know we're going to talk about again probably pretty soon. We talked about it after Deadpool, and my feelings have changed a little bit, and maybe Lou's has too in the other direction. I don't know. But I think the three of us will have some interesting things to say about it. But we want to hear what you have to say about it first, and maybe we'll be able to include some of that feedback in that discussion. So what do you think about the nature of R-rated comic book films now after having seen Logan? And what did you think about the scenes in Logan? Did you feel like it was gratuitous the way that they visually represented some of the violence? I don't know. There all kinds of different things I could present there, but I think that's perhaps the main one, at least in the context of this conversation. So shoot us an email, randomchatter@randomchatter.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And I'm going to keep going because I'm guessing nobody else has the show notes up except me.
Correct.
All right. You can find us online, facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. You can find us on Twitter. The main account for both this show and for the overall network is @randomchatter. Mine is Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE. Lou, where can we find you on Twitter?
It's @LouSecki. That's LouSecki.
All right. And Chris?
@TheCurseOfChris.
All right. You can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. We have a whole slew of them. I'm not going to list them all, but we have a large selection that seems to keep growing. So check them out. Spread the word about us. Leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you end up getting the show from. Tell your friends about us. Word of mouth is a great way to help other people discover both this show and the other shows on the network. So we really appreciate that. You can listen live. The month of March is going to be a little tricky for live shows because I'm normally the one who facilitates the live streaming, and I'm actually going to be traveling for most of the month of March. But normally you'll be able to hear us on Tuesday nights at about 9 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Eastern is normally when we start. If you're following us on Twitter, at Random Chatter, then you should be able to keep up with when we're starting, what the status of the live shows are. That's where we normally give the notifications of it. Right now we are streaming video, and we're doing it through Twitch instead of Ustream. So if you want to go to twitch.tv, do a search for Random Chatter Network, and you can follow us there. That'll also give you notifications of when we go live. And we're also going to be doing game streaming through there and some other things as well. We want to give a shout out to everybody who helps support us on Patreon. For more information on that, head over to patreon.com/randomchatter. And the music you hear in this episode is The Perfect Heist by Blue Stolly. And Acilius is Set and Sounds. All trademarks are owned by their respective owners. So that's it for this episode of Random Chatter. Until next time, take care.